Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I know everybody out there last night had the chance to watch the wildest game of week one of the NFL season. Baltimore at Vegas last night. Crazy environment. Had Steve Aoki there before the game. I was texting some guys back and forth, and I said, is this an NFL game or like WWE? I mean, it truly felt like it was a great environment. I'm not knocking it. I thought it was cool. I thought that's how you embrace the Las Vegas style of football. But for a little bit there, it felt like the game was kind of boring. Vegas wasn't getting anything going on offense. Baltimore looked good, not great. They were same old Baltimore in terms of their running game, which was still impressive considering how many guys they were missing in their backfield. Lamar Jackson wasn't really firing the ball down the field. A lot of checkdowns. Derek Carr was all over the place. At one point, I think he was 3 of 11 for like 26 yards. Then all of a sudden, the gears started turning around late second quarter. And the game got a little bit more interesting. The crowd got more into it. And it really is a remarkable stadium. That and SoFi Stadium in L.A., right, and of course both brand new. It's just cool to see those type of stadiums. I mean, right there next to the Strip, they got that big torch, light-up torch for Al Davis out there in the concourse level. But anyways, on this game, once it hit halftime, you thought, now maybe Vegas has things going for them. Baltimore looked a little bit more sluggish. That offensive line was, oof. That was a rough offensive line last night for Baltimore against a pass rush that notoriously has not been great. Max Crosby felt like he beat Alejandro Villanueva almost every time off the ball. Like, have you seen anything, or were you expecting anything like that, Marco?
No, I wasn't expecting anything that bad from the Ravens offensive line. I mean, I know Villanueva got cut by the Steelers this year. Still thought it was a respectable lineman to get from the sign this offseason for the Ravens, but that performance last night, man, that looked like something you saw in Super Bowl 55 this past year. But also, Max Crosby, though, is a hell of a defensive end, and the broadcast crew recognized that last night and the work that he puts in every week for this team. But Villanueva was getting owned on every single snap last night from that defensive end.
And when I look at those matchups, those one-on-one matchups, you want to go, were they beaten off the ball or were they just manhandled? It was both. Villanueva stood no chance against Max Crosby, and that's what eventually impacted this game. Baltimore had the chance late to put the game away with their rushing attack. Lamar Jackson actually had the lead twice late in the fourth quarter. Both times, Vegas was able to come back down the field and tie it back up. That's not what the crazy part of this game happened, though. That was not what was crazy. I want to go back to that final drive that Baltimore had late in the fourth quarter. They had moved deep into, well, semi-deep into Vegas territory. I think around the 30-yard line, thanks to a long run by Lamar Jackson. Vegas had to start burning some timeouts. A first down would have all but won the game for the Ravens. You have Justin Tucker. He can hit from 60 yards. They came up with a third and three situation. They had a little RPO play. Lamar Jackson decides to run it. Comes up short. Then it's fourth and one. You got to kick it. They kick it. Give Derek Carr 35 seconds. Two passes already in field goal range. They nail a 55-yarder, send it into overtime. Marco, I'm curious of your thoughts on this, because this was what I was thinking. I guess in the moment, it's easier to say, well, we got to kick it. We got the best kicker arguably in the league.
Right.
It's in his range. But at fourth and one, you convert that, then you got the last shot.
However, if you fail, I guess you give great field position to Vegas. Did you ever think that maybe Jim Harbaugh was going to go for that?
You know, it was discussed between my friends and I whether or not, because that's what everybody thinks. Fourth and one, late game. Like you said, you convert it, it's all yours. But I thought already the Ravens are an analytical offense, and they pay attention to that type of stuff. And so I still felt like the field goal was the right move, because at that point, you don't get it. You don't convert it. Las Vegas gets it at their own 35. We saw how easy it was for them to drive down and score a field goal with 35 seconds left on the clock. So I thought it was the right move from the Ravens to kick the field goal there. Wasn't surprised that they didn't go for it, although it did pop into my mind because fourth and one, but the offensive line at that point was not – they're already tired, and they had been getting beat all game. So – and it's not just from Justin Tucker being on my fantasy team, but I was pretty okay with them kicking it. It was more than that.
And you did bring up the good point that the offensive line was a little bit gassed. They had actually tried to convert on fourth down earlier in that game.
Yeah.
Got stuffed at the line. Same thing with the Raiders, I believe. So both teams came up short in that aspect. So they go ahead and kick it. And in my eyes, with a good NFL quarterback, anything over 30 seconds, even without any timeouts, is enough if you have a good kicker to tie that thing up. I mean, that was two quick, easy plays. Because you think about the defense, they're dropping back in coverage. They're not letting anything over their head.
Right.
And boom, boom, both to Edwards, who was quiet all night. Just easy, pretty good coverage, too. They get in field goal range. They knock in 55 yards. So we go to overtime. This was perhaps the most wild, embarrassing on some fronts, things that could have happened on opening night in Vegas. Of course, the Raiders get the ball to open overtime. They're driving down the field. They're around midfield. Actually, I want to say they're, if not, just into Baltimore territory. Derek Carr heaves a 30-yard floater. Edwards again comes up with the ball and then dives at the pylon, ruled a touchdown at the time. Everybody rushes the field. Players have their helmets off. They're shaking hands. And to me, I felt like, gosh, I don't know if he got in.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that didn't seem as clear of a touchdown to start storming the field. Well, they did. They're all in a huddle in the end zone. They're celebrating to the camera. And then hold on a second. Review happens. He's short at the 1 yard line. Game is still on. Defense has to come back on the field. Raiders have to come back on the field as well. First play, Derek Carr tries to sneak it. Stuffed at the line. Second and goal. Now you're starting to get a little bit nervous if you're a Raiders fan. Then the disaster of all disasters happens that you cannot have. Aside from a fumble, this is like the second. I guess a fumbled intercept, turning the ball over, this is the third worst thing you could do at the line.
Mm-hmm.
It's have a penalty to push you back. This is after a timeout. Alex Leatherwood, the rookie out of Alabama, right tackle, false start on the line, pushes him back 5 yards. Now you can't run it or sneak it in. They got to throw it. Derek Carr rolls out, pressured a little bit, throws it away. Now you got third down. Now it's really like, oh my God, are we not going to be able to convert this? They try a little quick slant over the middle, I think it was. And Carr puts some heat on it on third down there. Deflects off the hands, off a Raiders player's hands, then off a Baltimore player's helmet, and it's picked off. And they go down the end zone, so now they're set up, not pinned at their own goal line or the 20, 25-yard line. That, to me, felt like just the moment. That was the moment for the Ravens to say, now let's go win this game. I mean, all the life is sucked out of Allegiant Stadium. Everybody's like, that did not just happen. We had an inch to go, and we can't score. Not only did we not score, we turned it over. And credit to the Raiders defense, a group that is heavily criticized by the national media. And they're facing an elite quarterback in Lamar Jackson. He did not have the best of nights. Also taking account that he's not with his best running backs, which is what makes Baltimore's offense turn. He's missing Dobbins. He's missing Edwards. He's missing Hill. Tyson Williams last night was taking his first snaps in the NFL. That's what he was dealing with. Mm-hmm. He's dealing with some new guys on the offensive line. In the grand scheme of things, though, those elite quarterbacks, when they are gifted that opportunity, typically go. All they needed was a field goal at that point, too. You got Justin Tucker again. Had to get to the 40-yard line. Vegas's 40-yard line. Not only did they not get to the 40-yard line, they did exactly what they couldn't do, and now a sudden-death situation. Lamar Jackson, for as elusive as he is, really did not have great awareness last night in the pocket. There was a lot of times, and I guess it kind of comes down to some new guys on the line. He wasn't expected to get pressured that quickly. And I know that he's trying to develop more into a passer, and you want to stay in the pocket. You want to be strong. Look at all your options and fire down the field. That one fateful play, though, where he stayed in too long and got sacked by Carl Nassib, that was the second time in the game that Lamar fumbled. And that, I know you're blindsided by that. You just, again, overtime, you can't turn the ball over. And that gave the opportunity, again, to Vegas to go down and win the game. That's still not where the craziness ended in this one. So the Raiders get the ball back. They're already in field goal range, so they wanted to run one play. They run one play, get 3 yards. Here comes the field goal unit. Then it's a delay of game. Back comes the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was just me. I still kind of expect them to throw it. The Raiders or the Ravens had no idea they were going to throw it. No idea. And they gave it one of the easiest touchdowns of the week. Just nobody within 20 yards. And the Raiders go on to win 33-27 in week one. And the AFC West finishes a perfect 4-0 in week one. Any lasting thoughts you have from that game, Marco?
It became a fact, didn't it? The 4-0, the AFC West going undefeated week one. It turned out to be a fact. And, man, it's credit to the Raiders on this win because the Ravens are not an easy team to beat. I'm curious to see how this season goes for Baltimore because, like you mentioned, they've lost their two main running backs, and that's important in this system. And I'm curious to see because that it's now really a true test of a season for Lamar Jackson and head coach John Harbaugh because it reminds me of that time when the Chiefs were getting ready to go 1-5 against Chicago. I think it was 2015 because the Royals were playing the World or ALCS against the Astros or ALDS, excuse me, but when Jamal Charles went out with his torn ACL against Chicago, that was a big part of the Chiefs' offense during that season. But the emergence of Spencer Ware and Charkendrick West helped them win, 12, 13 games straight? They ended up winning.
I think they finished 11-5. They won 10 straight to finish off, and they beat Houston, so 12.
Yeah, and then went to Foxborough and lost in the divisional playoff game. But that's it. It all comes down to how good can your quarterback be. Alex Smith was a good quarterback, no doubt about it. And then your head coach also. And Andy Reid, we know, is a great coach.
You know, it really was, dang, that was a bad loss for Baltimore last night.
Yeah.
And I think the Raiders are going to be better than they were last year. I'm still not expecting a lot because they beat New Orleans last year, I think on opening night in Vegas. Mm. That was another big win, and then it ended up not turning into much. So Baltimore now 0-1 on the season. They take on the Chiefs next Sunday Night Football this week. It'll be a short week for them, a banged up team and a team that just lost in crushing fashion. When we come back here in the Shift, we are going to preview that matchup between the Ravens and the Chiefs and break down a little bit what happened across the AFC West in week one. You listen to the Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Again, I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. While we were on break, some breaking news in Royals baseball. Alec Lewis, who covers the team for The Athletic, tweeted out, I guess it was during the show, it wasn't during the break, Royals chairman and CEO John Sherman and general manager Dayton Moore will be holding a joint presser today at 2 p.m. to discuss several items pertaining to the organization. Only speculation we can give at this point, maybe some bumps and rolls, I guess. I don't think it'd be anything about the team, per se. It said in the organization, maybe a promotion to J.J. Piccolo. Dayton Moore moves up in the organization. Don't really know. By this point, all I got is speculation. So that will be at 2 p.m. per Alec Lewis today to discuss several items pertaining to the organization.
Have they already announced who's going to be succeeding Mike Swanson?
I don't think they have. That's another good point there.
Okay, because that's another one, because that's, you know, Mike Swanson isn't just someone who hasn't been around baseball. I mean, every road trip that they've been on this year, it seems like the home team has given some recognition to their head of PR, but because he's been in that position for well over 30 years.
Oh, yeah,
I know
Swanee's been around for a while, and that would make a lot of sense here. Just usually, I feel like those kind of announcements come towards like the last homestand, but
true.
I guess we'll find out today this afternoon, but with that, we are going to switch back into Chiefs and Ravens, and I guess before we actually go into that, I want to open up the phone lines. If you do have anything to say on today's show, be sure to call in at 913-491-8255. Again, that's 913-491-8255. So we have that Royals breaking news, and now we switch into the Chiefs, as we like to do now, just in the full swing of football season. And since we got a look at the Chiefs' Week 2 opponent last night, what can we expect? This game will be in Baltimore. It'll be their home opener. It'll be loud. It'll be crazy. This will be the second time in 2 years the Chiefs have had to go to Baltimore. Last season, there was no crowd. And the Chiefs pretty much dismantled Baltimore. They allowed them to get back into the game in the fourth quarter, but for the most part, Mahomes and the Chiefs had that game in its grasp from the start of that. And when I look at this game, this is definitely a worse Baltimore team than last year. Got a lot of the same players, missing some guys on that defense, missing some guys in line, obviously missing guys in the backfield. It's a short week for Baltimore, and they're coming off a crushing loss to Vegas, and it's not the team you want to turn around against. That's not just being biased. I think that would go the same for everybody. You're going on a short week. You do not want to be playing Kansas City. What will be different for the Chiefs in this one is that the defense will be healthier. They should get back Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu. Still won't have Willie Gay, but those are two key guys to this defense. They will get back. And it will be a much different defense. It'll be interesting to see how much faster they are. They're going up against an inferior offensive line in comparison to Cleveland. I mean, guess who's going up against Villanueva? It'll be Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm. Or Frank Clark.
Oh, gosh. Villanueva has got that's a tough go. Either one of those guys. I know Chris Jones is a much better pass rusher than Clark, but I think both those guys are better than Max Crosby.
Yeah.
And if week one was any indication of how Alejandro Villanueva was going to play, he is going to get beat like a drum on Sunday night. And you want to, I guess you could try to help and double team on Jones, and then you just leave it up to maybe winning your one-on-ones with Nadi and Reed on the inside.
Which Reed, you know, he's brought in to help, and that was the whole thing, help not only Chris Jones move to the outside, but so many times Chris Jones was double-teamed while he was playing in the interior part of the line. Reed is kind of there now to move him outside, but also you don't want to double-team Jones because I'm up there right at the middle now. You got to worry about Reed as well.
And the thing about Baltimore, the more Kansas City's gotten the shot at them, or I guess you want to flip it, the more the Ravens have gotten a shot at Kansas City, the more their offense just doesn't really compete mm-hmm. with Mahomes. I mean, Lamar Jackson is a great quarterback, and I like Lamar a lot. Those checkdowns are just not going to work. You look at Cleveland's recipe last Sunday. A lot of play action. You got to, one, get the running game going. Baltimore's capable of that. Baltimore also doesn't have a Nick Chubb or Kareem Hunt. They also don't have the line Cleveland has. Lamar Jackson's best option in the passing game is Hollywood Brown. He does have Sammy Watkins as well, Mark Andrews. Those three guys should shoulder the majority of the passing game, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
This was a game I marked in the offseason. I thought, okay, it's the fourth time Lamar has played Kansas City. One time he's got to be able to get Mahomes and the Chiefs. It's going to be at home, home opener, great environment, as it always is in any place in Sunday Night Football. Now, after what I've seen and the unfortunate events that happened to them in training camp, they're not just missing guys. They're missing some very key contributors to both their offense and their defense. And the Chiefs are getting back guys that are key contributors to their defense. I don't think there's going to be any answer for Tyreek Hill again, Travis Kelce. Heck, maybe even Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets more chances in the running game. Maybe we see Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, Byron Pringle get open because they're focusing so much on Kelce and Hill. I now would not be shocked if Kansas City comes away with a 2-score win.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, the more they've played, the more you just kind of sum it up now. It's a disadvantage for Baltimore. It used to be, you got that running game, you can beat Kansas City, you keep the ball away from them. The problem with keeping the ball away from Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs is you have to be 100% certain you're going to score. You have to score on those long drives. Not field goals, touchdowns.
Browns were doing it on Sunday.
Exactly. You eat 7-8 minutes of the clock. You score. Heck, go for two. They're up 8-0.
Mm-hmm.
That immediately puts pressure on the Chiefs to go down and score. Because if you don't, here comes another 6-7 minute drive. And if you score on that, then it gets interesting. Well, Baltimore's not a slow offense. They run the ball. They still get to the line quickly. There's only been a handful of teams that have really tried to milk the clock and not give Patrick Mahomes the ball. The Patriots did that a lot when Tom Brady was still there. Cleveland's done it. Minnesota tried it. Those teams have given a shot at keeping the ball away. You're just not going to score every time down. And more often than not, Kansas City's going to get points on their drives. Can't kick field goals. And that's the pressure of it. You're going into football games thinking, it's fourth and one. First drive of the game, it's fourth and one on our own 30 or our own 35. We have to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go out front, and you got to say, we got to be more aggressive than Kansas City. And the Chiefs don't even need to be as aggressive because they're going to score. I have no doubt in my mind the Ravens are going to try to go for it on, if they have a handful of fourth downs, they're going to go for it, I think, 80% of the time, depending on how the down and distance. I think anything fourth and five and in, they're going to try to go for it because they're going to probably treat this game as they are a severe underdog in it. They have a lot of guys missing, and it could get out of hand quickly like it did last season. Lamar Jackson is as elusive as a quarterback as you can get. I just thought it was interesting the other day. I was listening to Colin Cowherd on The Herd. He was talking about that Chiefs-Browns game and what defenses can do when they know quarterbacks have to throw. So he's referencing Baker Mayfield and what he was able to do early in that game against Kansas City. He was able to have his play action work. He's able to read the entire field, pick and choose where he wanted to throw. Then what happened when he realized he had to throw the ball? He's a different quarterback. That's what Colin Cowherd was saying. He was saying Baker Mayfield then had the interception, wasn't as on target. it's different when you look at Patrick Mahomes, and I guess Colin also referenced Tom Brady. The scores are relevant to them. The scores are relevant because they play the same either way. They're going to throw. They're going to be the same quarterback. Right now, I do think it is a difference between Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. I think Lamar Jackson has that same problem Baker has. When Lamar Jackson is forced to throw and he's not leading, he's a different quarterback. If Kansas City comes out of the gate, they got that pass rush, Chris Jones on Villanueva, they don't get the running game going, they're putting heat on Lamar Jackson, forcing him to make a big play. Kansas City could get out 10-14 nothing. Then you got Lamar on his heels. He cannot run the ball as frequently as he'd like. He's got to be able to throw the ball. And that's where he can get into mistakes. Last night, we saw what happened when Lamar had to throw the ball. There were some excellent throws that he had. He had a great one to Sammy, actually two to Sammy Watkins, that were really good throws. It's just, you have to be able in adversity, especially in an overtime game on the road, got to be able to march down the field, and you can't always do it with your feet. He still had a pretty good game as a quarterback. He was 19 of 30, over 60% completion percentage, 235 yards, almost 8 yards per attempt, and touchdown, no picks. He was sacked three times, and he fumbled twice. And that was the difference in the game. Lamar in the pocket sometimes just looks really uncomfortable. He likes to improvise. He is the closest thing to Michael Vick that the NFL has had since Michael Vick. He doesn't have the arm like Michael Vick, but he's shifty like that. I'm curious also when looking at this Baltimore defense. They tried blitzing Mahomes last season, and boy, did it backfire. They tried to stick to their game plan and say, we're going to make the Chiefs change up their offense for our defense. We're not going to adjust our defense to their offense. And Patrick Mahomes, when he is blitzed, is just, it's ridiculous for a quarterback. He gets the ball out quickly. They got guys that can get open quickly.
Yeah.
And if they keep that same energy, now they will have the crowd this time, this could really be a lopsided game. I could eat my own word. This could end up being close. Heck, maybe the Chiefs get upset. It will be an angry, angry Baltimore team. They don't want to start 0-2, as no other team does. They just lost to the Raiders, though, in a game they definitely should have won. Speaking of the Raiders, speaking of the Chiefs, the AFC West had pretty remarkable week one. I'm going to be honest. I know it was on our Fact or Fiction. I did not expect every AFC West team to win. Every team in the AFC West, every team in the NFC West managed to win in week one. Of course, the Chiefs over Cleveland, the Raiders over Baltimore, the Chargers over Washington, and the Broncos over the Giants. The Broncos, I don't know why I thought they'd be on upset watch. The Giants are, oh man.
Did you see some of the films on or highlights on Twitter of Soldier
yes.
going up against Miller? It's the Giant, man, the Cowboys, well, although the Eagles did have a good game also, and the Redskins are a challenge. Cowboys look like a team that could run away with that division if they stay healthy. Kind of
the same
thing from last year. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm waiting for that time. The Broncos looked really good, but yet they're playing the Giants. I'm waiting to see when they do look ugly. What will that look like?
Dallas has a chance to win that game by three games. I mean, I thought Washington would have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Taylor Heineke's turn. Because Ryan Fitzpatrick's out 6 to 8 weeks.
Right.
Which I still like Heineke, but if you're going up against Taylor Heineke, Daniel Jones, and who am I?
Oh, Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
In Philly. Oof, that is a big advantage for Dak. If that's the Cowboys team we see in Tampa for the rest of the season, I don't think anybody's going to come close in that division. The Eagles looked really good. Atlanta's bad, though, too. So, but with the AFC West. Definitely took me by surprise. Maybe it's going to be a little bit more competitive than I thought it would be. Teddy Bridgewater seems to be a good fit in Denver. Knock the Chargers all you want. That's a tough Washington team. That's a good defense. They had to go through some adversity there. They have to come back in the fourth quarter, score late. Justin Herbert in his second full season as a starter. Raiders, arguably the most impressive win of any of the AFC West teams. And then Kansas City was able to come back in the fourth quarter and beat Cleveland. Do I expect the AFC West to be this good every week? Hell no. Hell no. There's no way the AFC West will be this good every week in, week out. Denver is going to surprise some people early on record-wise because they have an incredibly easy schedule. Denver, after New York, has Jacksonville, the Jets, so that's 3-0.
Right.
Then you get Baltimore, depending on how Baltimore is. They get Baltimore at home. Always hard to play at Mile High. Then it gets a little bit tougher in the middle part of that schedule. Don't get me wrong there. But that's a 3-0. You know, you maybe lose to Baltimore. Then you got to go at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh looked great. Still haven't completely bought into Pittsburgh yet. Still would like to see a little bit more of how Big Ben can operate. I think it's a very limited quarterback. So Denver could be one of those teams that could start 6-5, 5-6. You know, better than they were last year. Chargers will be in the thick of it. Now maybe the Raiders are going to be a team that's going to be in the thick of it. I always got to come on here and admit when I'm wrong. You know, I need to come out and say when I'm wrong, when I'm very confident. I was very confident the AFC West was not going to go undefeated. And they did. A perfect 4-0 in week one of the NFL season. When we come back here in the shift, we are going to talk about some college football and recapping not only KU and K-State, but that Arkansas and Texas game. That was the one I had my eye on. So we'll get back into that when we come back. You've listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 5010 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. The breaking news just keeps happening, and this is still pertaining to the Royals. There's going to be a new GM in Kansas City as Dayton Moore promoted to president of the club, J.J. Piccolo promoted to the new general manager of the Kansas City Royals. As it looks like Sam Mellinger right now, J.J. Piccolo, longtime assistant GM and the head of Royals revamp player development, is the new GM. Dayton Moore will take on a president's role in the organization, confirming reports by John Heyman and Mark Feinstein. It doesn't come as too much of a shock. I wonder what eventually led to that. Maybe Dayton Moore saw that this was the perfect time to hand over the team. A lot of structural changes in Kansas City over the last couple of years. John Sherman comes in as the owner. J.J. Piccolo now, the new GM. I am really excited to see this type of change. How are things going to shake up in Kansas City? Free agency-wise, the players they go after? J.J. Piccolo has interviewed for other GM jobs in baseball. He was a strong candidate for a lot of teams. And he has been a key reason why the Royals farm system is in the state it is right now. Keep in mind, a few years ago, Royals were dead last in talent. And now, top five in baseball. They had to have seen that and thought this is the perfect time to turn this over. Now, J.J. Piccolo is going to be handling those baseball operations, those moves. And we've seen the same type of deal year in and year out with Dayton Moore. It's seen a lot of the same guys are brought in free agency. They have shifted a little bit more analytically minded. But you got to go out and look at some of these teams and what they've done around the American League. And I guess let's go baseball for that matter. The Giants were the first teams to clinch a postseason berth. Look at their roster. How many superstars do they have? Look what Tampa Bay has done with their roster. It was time for the Royals to embrace this new school mentality. And you know what? As if you are a person out there that was not a fan of Dayton Moore, we still need to appreciate what he was able to accomplish in his 15 or so years as the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. He was a guy that truly cared about his players. He cared about their well-being. And he brought two American League pennants and a World Series championship to a small market club. Now, that does not mean that he gets a pass for some of the moves he's made. That's not how big league clubs should operate. Still, he took over an organization in ruins back in 2006. He was able to build a championship roster with guys that he drafted. He knew that trade in 2010 when they sent Zach Greinke to the Milwaukee Brewers may have been pushed back on by the rest of baseball. Zach Greinke was Cy Young Award pitcher. He was the only thing bringing fans to Kauffman Stadium. He goes in and gets Alcides Escobar, World Series champion. Lorenzo Cain, World Series champion. Jake Odorizzi, then traded to Tampa Bay for James Shields and Wade Davis. Jeremy Jeffress, another guy who has had a good amount of success in the major leagues. He found those guys. He wanted those guys. He envisioned those guys as a part of his championship team. Dayton Moore, though, has also had some bad drafts, some bad free agent signings that have hurt the team. He didn't always extend the players at the right time. Most recently, it's been Hunter Dozier. You want to look back, maybe it's the Alex Gordon contract. But you cannot deny that Dayton Moore always cared about his players and the coaching staff. A lot of general managers in baseball are big business guys. They only care about the money they're handing out. I guess it goes also with the owner. They're bringing in guys regardless of their background. And Dayton Moore, yes, he has sometimes picked players that aren't as good but have a better character. It did work out for him, though, for two seasons, 2014 and 2015. It also didn't work out in any of those other seasons on the guys he always brought in. Dayton Moore is going to go down as a guy that maybe did the impossible and turning what the Royals were into what they eventually became as a World Series winner. 29 years without a postseason appearance, for that matter. And yes, it did take him 8 years to get to the postseason once he took over. It takes teams a while, though. And we always say flags fly forever, and they always will. You will always remember those 2014 and 15 teams. And you have to thank Dayton Moore for that, because he had a big part in that. The rest of baseball respects Dayton Moore and Kansas City's organization. We also, as fans, can now respect it was time to have maybe a change at the general manager position for a guy that really does deserve it. In my eyes, an excellent hire or a promotion in the Kansas City organization. So if you haven't heard, the Royals have a new general manager. J.J. Piccolo is now promoted to that spot. Dayton Moore, who was the acting general manager, now promoted to the president of the organization. Now we'll go back into what we were planning to talk about after the break, because you know what? That's what happens here on our show. We have to deal with breaking news stuff. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes can throw you for a little bit of a loop, but we got to talk about it, because if we're not going to talk about it, somebody else will. So there was some college football, of course, over the weekend. KU again played on Friday, K-State on Saturday. KU lost to Coastal Carolina for the third time. They're now 0-3 against Coastal in the last couple of years. First Power 5 school Coastal had hosted in its program history. They beat down the Jayhawks 49-22. Coastal was ranked, and KU for about 2.5 quarters were pretty competitive in the game. They were within one score at one point. Jason Bean played pretty well. Did get a little bit nicked up there at the end, but positives in some aspects, but still at the same time, moral victories are not something I tend to look at. KU has had a lot of moral victories over the last decade. It doesn't always mean that you're going to succeed in the week after. You got to prove it. There still were some issues that will need to be corrected within the team. I think this defense, which looked great against South Dakota, now it is an FCS program, they could not stop a nosebleed on Friday night. That was a pretty bad defensive performance. We talked about last week what KU needed to do, win the turnover battle. They coughed the ball up a few times. And that's going to cost you on the road. That's going to allow good teams to beat you down and put up the score they did. 49 points for Coastal. KU did not cover, just barely did not cover. Jayhawks do get 22 points. And if I'm going to take a positive spin out of it, that to me felt like a game under previous coaches could have ended in a 49-7 game, 56-14. KU did battle, and they look good on some offensive possessions. They really did. And now they'll have Baylor coming back to Lawrence this Saturday, 2:30 kickoff, as the Jayhawks will look to start Big 12 play 1-0. They may have, this will be one of their better opportunities in the Big 12 to maybe be competitive or win a game. It's at home against Baylor. Baylor was projected to be near the bottom in the standings. So curious how they'll come out. Will we get to see the Jason Bean that was against Coastal, running wild, made some good, smart decisions with the ball? That running game's got to get a lot better, though. Same with that line, and that defense has got to be able to get off the field. K-State, on the other hand, they were winners. They barely eked out against Southern Illinois. Now, a lot happened in that game for it to be close. I think the Salukis had 23 points in the second quarter. Skylar Thompson went down again. Just got a feel for the guy. Six-year senior, non-contact. He was, I think it was an option play, and he's just running, just knee buckles, face plant onto the ground. And that really does, you know, throw out rivalry. Nobody ever wants to root or cheer an injury. That's not what you do. And that's an awful thing for Skylar Thompson, who's a local kid, has poured his heart and soul into K-State's program, came back to lead this team. And they looked great in week one with him. And then, unfortunately, goes down again with a knee injury. Now, it doesn't appear, Chris Kleinman said, doesn't appear to be season-ending. He will be back. I think he's just out indefinitely right now. Will Howard, who took over last year as a true freshman, is the acting quarterback in Manhattan. And I follow some K-State people on Twitter. I follow, you know, guys 247, you know, go Power Cat, whatever, what have you. And I also follow some fans, and they are really hard on Will Howard for a guy that really wasn't expected to be a starter until his second or third year, at least I think, in the Wildcats' offense. Both times he's been thrust in a situation where he really couldn't have predicted to be the quarterback. Now again, he will have to do that. And it will be his job to keep that team bowl eligible in Big 12 play. And I'll be honest, K-State has a rough stretch to open in the Big 12, a very rough stretch. And it would have been great to have Skylar Thompson there with that team, because I think Skylar Thompson gives them a chance to win 8-9 games. Verdict's still out on Will Howard. Well, they did not make a bowl game last year with him. He's still really young. You don't want to knock a true freshman in his abilities. He's going to improve. He's just not been given the easiest of situations right now. Again, having to take over early in the season due to an injury. Now he's got the pressure of, you know, the rest of the fan base is hurting because Skylar Thompson's out. And he is a great guy. And that's I really hate to see him go down, because K-State was playing very well with Skylar Thompson at quarterback. So We'll have to see what Will Howard has in store for K-State as they get inch closer. They have one more game before they enter that rough stretch in Big 12 play. The Wildcats, right now, 4 wins away from being bowl eligible. So, good luck to Will Howard, and hopefully Skylar Thompson can make a speedy recovery. The other college football game I wanted to talk about, and this was just maybe the most satisfying one of the weekend. Arkansas just beating the hell out of Texas. I mean, throttling the Longhorns in Fayetteville. Place was rocking. I don't know if you had the chance to listen to that on the telecast. Man, that place was loud. And it looked from the snap like Texas was shell-shocked. Hudson Card, at no point in that game, had any rhythm going for Texas. No point in that game did Texas truly have a shot. They were beaten up front, both sides of the ball. Arkansas got a ton of pressure on Hudson Card. And the running game just had all kinds of holes. And the Razorbacks were able to use 3-4 running backs. Big backs. And Texas, they can recruit well. They bring in those big guys. Texas has just as big of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Sam Pittman in Arkansas just punched him in the mouth. And I know Joe Tessitore was mentioning that on the broadcast. He was like, they came out and just took a punch to the face. And there was one point in the game, Texas had a chance to maybe flip it.
Right.
Cato Jefferson was picked off in their own territory. Texas goes out and score. It's 16-7. Arkansas comes right back. Long drive, using their running game, scores. That point, it's over. And it just spiraled downhill for Hudson Card in Texas. And Steve Sarkisian got coached around. Sam Pittman pretty much dominated that matchup from start to finish. There was a lot of questionable play calls. One of them was on 4th-and-1, and Texas just ran it straight up the gun and got stuffed after getting beat all night up front. No trickery, just stuffed up front. That Arkansas team is going to be pretty interesting to watch in SEC play. That's no cakewalk in beating Texas the way they did. The environment was great, but I don't know if I've seen Texas get beat down like that in a long time. And the way they did, that was not one of those air it out, you know, you're just throwing the ball over the place. That was smash mouth football again and again and again. And Texas, as we all know, said, we got to go to a better conference. We got to go. Us and Oklahoma have to go to the SEC because we're too good for the Big 12. And now what's going to happen when they have to play the Alabamas and Georgias? I think Oklahoma is better suited right now for the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a good impression from Texas. And that was an old rival, you know, Southwest Conference. That was a good rivalry matchup back in the day. And you're going to have that extra juice for it. Texas looked like they wanted no part of Arkansas in that game. I mean, everything went wrong for Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns. It was a complete and utter beatdown. And their first chance to really showcase the SEC. Texas goes in and wins that in Fayetteville. You can kind of see that fit. Because I always thought going into the season, I thought Arkansas was a pretty good team. They're not one of the top teams right now in the SEC. That's an impressive win down in Fayetteville when you know the crowd they're going to have. Oh, man, that was a... They had to bench Hudson Card. Their running game, Bijan Robinson, non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of missed throws deep. I mean, there were... Hudson Card had, I think, 5 or 6 passes where could have been touchdowns and overshot his man by 7-8 yards. I mean, he just looked rattled all night. And it's a tough environment playing. He's a young guy. Wouldn't be shocked, though, to see Casey Thompson as Texas' starting quarterback moving forward. So that, to me, was the biggest game I watched over the weekend. I don't know about you. That was a shocking beatdown.
That was a beatdown. I really liked the Ohio State-Oregon game. That was a really fun game to watch. Pac-12, Big Ten, Oregon, man, they got some dudes on that offensive line. I didn't realize that the head coach put an emphasis into recruiting, you know, making sure his offensive line is top-notch, but they have a really good team this year. with the Ducks.
Oregon, yeah, they were another big shock. I mean, they didn't beat down Ohio State, but they controlled the game for the most part. I mean, they had Ohio State really trying to come back in that one. So impressive wins for both the Ducks and the Razorbacks in week two of the college football season. Before we wrap it up here today on The Shift, we want to get to our favorite segment of fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
All right, Jack, fact or fiction, will the Chiefs look into adding a wide receiver too during the season?
It is a long season, and I know it was not an impressive performance from Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, and Byron Pringle in week one. They're going to get better. I do see at some point the Chiefs adding a wide receiver as they get closer to playoff contention. Somebody may get cut. John Brown's one of those guys available right now, mm-hmm. the guy that played his college football at Pitt State. It's going to get better. I'm going to say no to a wide receiver too. I think they'll add a wide receiver. I don't see anybody getting added that'll be a true number two in this offense. I'm going to go fiction on that.
Fact or fiction, the Raiders win 10 games this season.
Again, this is going to be a tough one because it's so early. They looked great last night. I'm still not going to buy in yet. I'm not going to buy in. They got to win early. They got to win those. They got Pittsburgh this week in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They got to win that one for me to truly believe. So I'm still going to say fiction for now. The Raiders are not going to win 10 games.
Fact or fiction, KU keeps Baylor under 30 points.
If KU does keep Baylor under 30 points, they're going to have a really good chance to win this game. I don't know yet if I think this offense for Baylor is worse than Coastal Carolina's. We'll be at home. I know there's not much of a home field advantage in Lawrence. I'm going to say it's going to be a bounce back week, though. I think it's going to be fact. I think this one will be a little bit closer. KU will keep Baylor under 30 points. I'm not going to commit yet to if I think KU will be super close in the game.
It's been a long time since we said KU's been able to be in a shootout with a team, if anything.
No kidding.
Fact or fiction, will Will Howard keep KSU bowl eligible without Thompson?
All depending on when Skylar Thompson comes back. I think he's going to have some big games. You know, there's still some K-State can win with Will Howard at quarterback. I'm going to say fact. I think he will have a better year than he did last year, and he'll hand it off when Skylar Thompson comes back with a chance for the Wildcats to move in to bowl contention.
And finally, fact or fiction, Frank Clark will have a sack on Sunday.
This of the five, I feel like, has to be the easiest one. If he goes up against Villanueva, or I guess anybody right now, I guess you have Ronnie Staley. If Chris Jones has Villanueva, he'll go against Ronnie Staley, but I guess he could always switch over. I'm going to go fact, though. That was a bad performance from Baltimore's offensive line. I feel like Clark's got something up his sleeve. He's been, you know, chomping at the bit to come back onto the field. I think we're going to see the new Frank Clark again, that playoff Frank Clark. I think he'll be really amped up and ready to go. So I'm going to go fact, Frank Clark will have a sack on Sunday. With that, that'll wrap up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Same time tomorrow, 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.